When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hello, and welcome to Stop Hammer Time. My name is Phil Whelans, and since we last spoke to you, we have I've been to four games of football. My guest this week, my co-host this week, Jim Grant, has been to five games of football. So there's a lot of football to talk about. We should probably talk about it in reverse order because it sort of gets worse as it goes along. But we'll start. We'll start by saying hello to Jim Grant.
Hello. Hi. Hello. Good evening.
We've seen a lot of football. You've seen five and I've seen four.
Yeah, it's been sort of relentless, really.
We went to Crystal Palace at the weekend and then we went and did a pub quiz.
We did.
And we came joint top.
Joint top. And then
lost in a narrow tiebreak.
Yes, Crystal Palace. Well, if ever a 4-3 scoreline sort of misrepresented a game, this was it, wasn't it?
I mean, you
look at that and you think, oh, it must have been an end-to-end thriller. But they really outplayed us in a way. Well, we haven't really been outplayed like that since the Brighton game, I would say. I don't think it was quite as desperate as the Brighton game.
No, I mean, we were sort of present. You and I said at the time, this is a possible byproduct of that sort of fatigue of playing so many games, because we were there and we were competitive, is not really the right word, but we were just not at it. Second balls, we just couldn't win second balls. Quite often we would win the ball back through hard work and then just pass it to one of their players.
I think that would be the only sort of mitigating factor, would be that sense that they have been playing, game after game after game. And in spite of signing nine players or whatever it was in the summer, it turns out we still have quite a thin squad.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it's reached the point where, the nucleus of players that he feels he can rely on has shrunk to about 12. They play every game.
And, yes, absolutely.
It's not surprising that they are now beginning to be a little bit leg weary.
And it's a worry, isn't it? Because, the two things we're after are our continued presence in the Premier League, but also to win this European tournament. And, I mean, if we're just knackering ourselves playing the games we need to play well in to stay in the Premier League at the expense of winning this European trophy so that we give ourselves the worst possible chance to win that trophy, it's just losing on all fronts. It's a kind of lose-lose situation. And it does feel that could well be where this is going. We God, I mean, it was difficult, wasn't it? I mean, we would have liked to have felt that we could come out of those two games. I think Crystal Palace have always been a difficult team and have a lot of talent, and we will talk more about that game specifically. But come out of Liverpool, you know, and Palace with, I don't know, 1 point.
1 point.
Because those are fine margins, aren't they? I mean, just something to get us just another point away from the relegation zone. Because now we've got two games coming up this week. You know, meaning another, we already played three games in 8 days with Bournemouth, Liverpool and Crystal Palace. And now we're going to play three games in 8 days with Crystal Palace, Manchester City and Manchester United.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's utterly relentless and it's really, you know, looking quite nailed on that we get nil point from these two games this week.
Yeah, well, I mean, I suppose, you know, the crumb of comfort is that in the end, goal difference wasn't damaged as badly as it might have been. And that's kind of worth a point, isn't it?
Yes.
And I think, you know, last one or two results have gone all right for us. I mean, last night's draw probably suited us.
Yeah.
You know, we've still got that little bit of a cushion. It could get a bit squeaky, but you still feel actually it would take quite a lot for, you know, three of those bottom five clubs to go past, and it's in our own hands in that we play two of them, you know. So,
yes, that's right. Yeah, Leicester and Leeds, isn't it?
You know,
but How many games have we got to go? Four?
We've got five, I think.
So it's Leicester, Leeds, the two Manchesters, and who else?
Brentford.
Brentford, yeah. Palace were very good, weren't they? Their attacking unit is pretty awesome. Eze, Alesi, Zaha, and Ayew, and Schlupp joining in the attack we sort of competed with them, but we just fell short because we couldn't hold on to the ball. In a way, that sort of possible kind of fatigue might have explained, you know, Thomas Suchek's inexplicable, after scoring a very good goal, his very tired first touch of that ball from Fabianski leading to it being pounced on, you know.
Yeah, I mean, their defending from set pieces was obviously woeful.
Yeah.
He scored three out of four corners and actually threatened at the one that we didn't score from. You know, that if you're going to get three goals from set pieces away from home, you need not to concede four softish goals, which is what we did. You know, they were very good with the ball, Palace, but like Brighton, very very good without it. You know, far as you say, just second ball after second ball, they were winning, put us under very good pressure in uncomfortable areas. They've been given a bit of a new lease of life, I think, by Hodgson, oddly enough, and played with a kind of freedom that, you know, that sometimes, you know, sometimes it's good to play teams that are essentially safe, but sometimes they play with a kind of celebratory freedom, which is what Palace did, you know.
This podcast is going to be the story of our rediscovery of set pieces, isn't it? Because some of the other games, you know, our goals came for set pieces. And I mean, that is encouraging in a sense, well, in quite a big sense, in that when we just could not score goals for Toffee, we were sort of bemoaning the kind of lack of opportunities from set pieces because we were good at them in the last couple of seasons. And we seem to have rediscovered that. The goals in the Palace game, I think it's a Bowen corner, I think, that comes in. And, you know, terrible header away from Eze, a good finish from Suchek.
Yeah.
And I think it might be the Emerson.
Yeah,
because Cresswell's not on yet. Emerson flicked on by Suchek, goal from Antonio. Then our third one is corner from Cresswell, flicked on again, Suchek, goal from Agued. Yeah. And the sort of flick on from Suchek is something that we did see because he's tall and, you know, at the near post, if he can get to it. And it's seeing it makes you think it was a way we used to get goals, and why have we not been
exactly
seeing it, you know?
Exactly. Yeah,
the early part of this
season. Pretty weird. Well, we had that odd phase when Declan Rice was taking the corners,
yeah,
and turned out to be not very good at it. And yeah. I suppose Cresswell sort of getting a few more games does improve the dead ball delivery.
Yeah.
And I have a little shout out for him actually, because he's so often repeatedly written off, isn't he? And
yeah,
actually, he's been pretty good. He came on and was one of our better players instantly, yes, at Palace, I thought.
Well, he made changes at half-time, didn't he? And yeah, that's not something that happens all the time. I mean, there was clearly a problem down that left side.
Yeah.
Ben
Rama didn't help, did he?
He has no idea how to defend at all. He doesn't stand in the right place. He doesn't stand close enough to the player. He picks exactly the wrong distance to stand from an attacking player and sort of dances a bit in front of them and then he's run basket.
He started the season well, didn't he, by his standards, and was contributing a lot and threatening. And I feel he has waned as the season has gone on. He came on for Fornals, who had struggled, to be fair. I mean, I don't think we can necessarily criticise taking Fornals off. He struggled to get into the game. But Ben Rama had one of his worst 45 minutes, I think, in recent
I mean,
he was woeful.
By some strange chance, we were chasing an equaliser at the end of the game.
Yeah,
a completely undeserved equaliser.
Yeah,
and the ball came to him and he hit it into the top tier. I mean, it was absolutely...
And we had our tall players up, you know, just needed to put it
was unbelievable.
It was extraordinary.
His decision-making is just...
There was another moment in the second half, wasn't there, where he drifted in field quite effectively.
Mm.
The ball was one of our few decent moves in the game. The ball came to him in a lot, you know, maybe 20, 25 yards. That was difficult to tell from our angle.
Yeah.
But certainly in space enough, it felt, to either drive forward or shoot. And he sort of dithered and then slid the ball sideways to someone with a bit of not enough weight on it. You know, it fizzled away, didn't it? And
it's extraordinary. His decision making is awful, including leaving Brentford and coming to West Ham. absolute. I mean, he will just do the wrong thing. You know, the crosses just into the goalkeeper's hands. You know, shoots when there's clearly a forest of players' legs that he's going to hit. Then doesn't shoot when he's got a clear path to the goal. Passes instead. It's extraordinary.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the thing, isn't it? Because Antonio is also, you know, bless him, is also capable of that, but also capable of moments of brilliance. You know, is actually in a sort of vein of quite good form. And I think it's, you know, perhaps something we'll come on to, but if you have a front three of Bowen, Antonio and Ben Rama, one of those footballers has got to be a better player. It's just not strong enough for the Premier League. You know,
I agree. I absolutely agree. I think we, you know, obviously Scamacca has struggled and is now injured and so on. So that hasn't worked out well. Cornet's injury, you know, it did look in the summer as though that area of obvious, not so much weakness, but thinness had been addressed, but it hasn't panned out. And some of that's bad luck, isn't it? But some of it, you know, looks like more than carelessness when it seems to happen over and over again to West Ham, isn't it? You know, players who come in and struggle to fit in, it's been there to a certain extent in Paqueta, who by the way also struggled against Palace and walked past us. We were very near the front, weren't we? He walked past us, having been substituted, looking very sort of sorry for himself, didn't he?
Yes, yes. Yeah, he didn't want to come off.
But I think he was disappointed with himself as well.
Yeah, yeah. No, because in the last few games, he's been fantastic, you know, and we will come on to that. Yeah. I mean, he's really starting to look the real article. But again, he might have been kind of exhausted having played against Bournemouth and Liverpool. You know, it might have just been, you know, we needed to sort of rotate a bit more. But, you know, he did make changes at halftime. I mean, he's criticised for not making changes, but he did. He addressed that problem up the left side. It was sort of a bad day at the office. But I do sort of think that, you know, fatigue may have well have had a part to play, and that's just not going to get
in. Well, and the injury to Zuma as well, you know, so I don't know. I'm not up to a bit busy. I'm not up to speed with any news that's coming out about him, but.
Oh, I don't think it's good. I mean,
it didn't look good.
I think he might not play again this season. It's ligament damage. It was actually a sort of follow through, wasn't it, from the scorer of that goal, which may have been Eze. Talking of Eze, that was the softest penalty. I mean, we're going to have a bit of penalty chat in this podcast, but that was the softest penalty I've ever seen given. It was ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. Aguerd just put a hand on him, which you're allowed to do. And he pretended that he had been pulled over, which he hadn't. I mean, you know, someone on Twitter posted a photo of the incident and went, there you are, it proves clearly a Crystal Palace fan. And I went, well, it actually looks like a picture of Aguerd trying to keep him up. If you want to interpret what that picture is showing you, there's a man falling to the ground and it looks like he's holding onto his hand to try and stop him falling to the ground. It's absolutely, you know, the pundits all agreed, absolutely ridiculous. I just don't, and it went to VAR, didn't it? So
indeed,
I can't imagine what they're concluding when they look at it. Ah, yes, you see, if we slow it down, there's contact. It's okay if there's contact in football in the penalty area.
I think the problem is that they're looking for, in defence, and I don't often do this, but in defence of the VAR, I would say the aim of it is to, as far as possible, allow the on-field referee to referee the game and make decisions, some of which, of course, will inevitably be open to you know, opinion and debate and whatever. They're not always completely objective. And I suppose the argument is they need to find evidence that he's obviously made a clear and obvious error, I think is the phrase that's that's used. So they can't really, you know, if he has on the field interpreted the contact as and there is that contact, they are reluctant. And I think fair enough. I don't think we want the games to be
remotely
refereed like computer games, but it leads to those disappointing things where, you know, you think, well, the referee on the field should be better. They should all be better. I mean, you know, we've said this over and over and over again. You watch the refereeing in sort of major European tournaments, and I know, I suppose they're creaming off the better ones, but you do just get this sort of sense that ours are subpar, really, you know, and that probably segues nicely into the Liverpool game, which was a shocking refereeing performance in my view. Really, really shocking.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Not just in one of those, you know, it wasn't full of glaring, awful, horrible errors, although there was one crucial one near the end.
Yeah.
But it was just a consistent failure to pick up on niggling fouls from Liverpool and all those little decisions all going their way in that kind of hugely frustrating
Yes, we saw it against Arsenal as well, didn't we? And I mean, I imagine that, you know, podcasts and, you know, fanzines of all of the teams that are not the kind of, as you called them, the Sky teams or European Super League teams, as I like to call them, you know, must all be complaining about the decisions that go in favour of those teams whenever they come to play them. And it must be difficult as a sort of supporter of those teams seeing what we're all complaining about, you know, Liverpool fans and Manchester United fans seeing what we're complaining about. They must think, oh, we get dealt with exactly the same. But if you're a fan of a team playing one of those teams and just see how routinely they can trip you up and it's just flat waved away by the referee, you trip them up, the identical infringement happens.
You know, it isn't just, we keep coming back to this theme and supporters of clubs like ours do, time and again, but it's because we know it's true, and we know that over a long period of time the statistics bear it out in terms of the way decisions go, and we know, you know, we don't know in the sense of kind of utter objective facts, but we do know, really, don't we, that if the handball that Thiago made happened, if it was and the game was 2-1 to West Ham and it happened in our box, so yeah. Absolutely, no, that would have been a penalty.
Yes. Let's talk about that game. Let's talk about the Liverpool game. It was...
You thought it was a worse performance than I did, didn't you, I think?
Yeah. I mean, we got off to a really bad start in that game. Though, oddly, you know, we scored.
What a goal. I mean,
yeah, fantastic
goal of the season, I think. You know, everything about it. We've slagged off Benrahma, but his touch to start that goal was a moment of sublime skill.
Yes, it's a one-touch layoff, isn't it?
Brilliant.
One-touch layoff. First yeah, touch. Very nice touch. Brilliant. And then 2-1-2s between Paqueta and Antonio.
Yeah.
If you sort of, I mean, they're, you know, in a sense, they are, they're both players, Antonio especially, where we've said, you know, ever since he signed for the club in 2015, if he has too much time to think about something, he'll balls it up. But those 1-2s, Paqueta was in both instances showing him what he wanted. And he did
yes.
it. You know, he did it. You know, it was instinctive. Paqueta had kept his run going. Antonio completely understood that all it needed him to do is redirect the ball. And he did that twice. And with the perfect weight, because he will overhit or underhit two-yard pass. But again, if he doesn't have too much time to think about it, it will be fine. Similarly with Benrahma, I think, you know, Paqueta had kind of started a run. Benrahma saw it, the ball came down, and he just in one touch, you know, laid it off. It's kind of the one good thing he did in the game. But it was a fantastic goal. It was a fantastic finish. Yeah, absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they didn't score four goals like Crystal Palace did, and we made things hard for them. And again, you know, we were sort of chasing an equaliser towards the end, as we were bizarrely against Crystal Palace. But
we were better. We were better in the second half. I thought we defended. Yeah. We got tighter to them. Didn't really give them too much opportunity. We were in the first half. We did a lot of that sort of, we was like kind of, we were sort of pressing, but not really, you know, a lot of that kind of slightly half-hearted that is the worst of both worlds, because it's easy to play through and means you have too many players up the pitch, you know, and so on. And they didn't really capitalize on it as much as you might have expected. I mean, their goal was, you know, he threaded it through the eye of a needle in terms of getting it in there. But you've got to really, you know, somebody shouldn't be scoring that goal from there, should they?
No,
really?
No. Well, like the Palace goals, really, they just cut us open, you know. Everyone kind of stood and watched, really. It was in the Liverpool game that we had a few opportunities from corners, and that really sort of, you know, after the Bournemouth game, that really sort of cemented the notion that, again, we've become good at set pieces after, you know, half a season of being absolutely awful at them, both defending and scoring from them. Bowen had an offside goal, didn't he? And
yeah, it was a great finish.
It was quite tight,
but obviously
other end of the ground from us, so we couldn't see. We had a kind of flattened perspective, so I couldn't really see. You know, I didn't see a replay of it on Match of the Day. So,
no,
I guess it was offside.
Yeah. But I mean, it was quite tight. And it's a shame he didn't save the finish for the legitimate chance he did get near the end, where he rather tamely passed it into Alisson's hands, having hit a really good left foot finish first time round.
Yes, but
Cornet blasted one over, didn't he?
Yes, he did. You know, we probably said this on the last podcast because it's sort of fairly obvious conclusion to draw. But I just think, you know, you've bought the guy. We just got to see what he's like. And I don't think we can see what he's like by just giving him 8 minutes at the end of the match.
It's really.
I just don't think that in a way is the worst of all worlds. It's like going, you know, well, I'm not sure if he's good enough. You won't know if you don't play him. Well, and and also you can take him off.
Yeah.
If he's stinking the place, so you take him off.
Exactly. It would make sense if we had a left winger who was absolutely on fire and creating goals and banging them in, but we don't. It's a bit of a problem area at the moment. And
yes, absolutely.
You know, he deserves to have a crack at it. I mean, hopefully he will. Hopefully he'll play. We will obviously come on perhaps to talk a little bit about some, you know, the impending horror of tomorrow. But
penalty, that, you know, I could see quite a strong argument that it's, you know, not dissimilar to the shout that came when Souček kind of fell over and the ball hit his arm. But it wasn't like that because Thiago goes down and that's the same, and his hand comes into contact with the ball. But basically, the ball bounces between the ground and his hand a couple of times. You know, like when Wile E. Coyote hits the ground and then bounces up into an overhang cliff and then bounces between them like a sort of pneumatic drill thing. It did that to the point where he had essentially stopped the ball moving with his hand, stood up and cleared it. So it's like he's trapped the ball with his hand.
It was hand to ball, not ball to hand. His hand moves to the ball. I mean, I think the one at the end, it was as much a penalty as the one that was given against Ghent.
Yes.
And I'm not sure that the Souček one, but I think we got away with that. I mean, I think we probably got away. You wouldn't have complained. The one that I thought was outrageous in comparison was the Antonio one against Arsenal. We probably talked about that, but you know, where he's not looking at the ball, he's turned away, the ball has hit the arm that he's got by his side,
it's ball to hand,
and bounced onto another arm when he's not looking at the ball. I mean, that was a ridiculous decision, but this one was just outrageous.
But with the Thiago one, it's like it's. I mean, you know, they have made a rod for their backs by constantly revising what they consider to be hand.
It's a mess.
If you're arguing that Thiago, you know, it wasn't intentional, and I think that that's fine, but surely the benefit they gain from it, it's just too much. If, like, a defender is able to stop the ball with his hand, essentially put his hand on the ball to still it, to bring it to a standstill, as if he's taking a corner or a free kick or a penalty, and then get up and just clear it. I mean, it can't be intentional, does it? You can't say it's unintentional if someone benefits from it to that extent.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely. Well, I think the loss doesn't have to be intentional. It's about your arm being in an unnatural position. Well, nothing is more unnatural than punching the ball into the ground. I don't care whether you meant to do it or not. That is handball. It's the utter different. I mean, I just staggering beyond belief. And the point was, didn't go to VAR. Apparently, there was no VAR check.
No, it's very weird. Isn't
but that in itself is bewildering. And yeah, we were really, you know, you could argue we probably didn't deserve a point. But we, you know, we hung on into that in
the game.
Yeah. And, you know, we were definitely denied at least the opportunity for a point in a really
yes, and it is a shame not to have come out of that pair of fixtures with a point.
Yeah, it would have made a big difference, I think. You know, that,
before we take a break. Yeah, it would have just, we really just need a handful of points to stay in the division, and just one point from those two fixtures would have been good. Before we go to a break, I mean, we are banging it long now, aren't we? It's now sort of official. It's become a tactic. And, you know, what we just weren't doing, we're winning any second balls from it against Crystal Palace. There were times when it seemed to work in that Souček headed it on to, because it's the same old problem with you know, banging it up to a big man up front, is that the person you expect it, you want it to land to, is him. It needs to be sort of, if they're your striker, but they're also your header on of the ball. We used to see this with Andy Carroll, didn't we? Because Allardyce wanted it banged up long to Andy Carroll, who can only sort of really, you know, head it to himself because there's no one else up there, nobody else with him. So it would just go, you know, to a central defender or to their goalkeeper. And, once or twice it sort of worked, but whether Souček or Antonio were in the right place to head it onwards didn't really seem to matter. We just did it anyway. Just banged it long.
Yeah, I mean, Fabianski. In the old days when people played those kinds of long balls, you usually had two, it was 4-4-2, and very often you had a striker, a secondary striker, who was looking to run beyond the big man who'd flick it on, or you know, be there for the layoff. You know, but now when you're in that kind of 4-3-3-ish sort of formation, it's rarely the case that anyone gets close enough to your central, you know, your header on of the ball that it's effective. And also against Liverpool, we just consistently stuck the ball on Matip's head, didn't we? I mean, time and time again.
He is a giant, and there's no point trying to sort of, you know, bang it to a fictional person who is taller than Matip. Matip's just going to win all of those. But yes, it was a shame not to come away from that brace of games with at least a point. But we still have three games to talk about before those two games took place, including our European adventure so far. But we'll carry on talking about those after this message.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back. Now, in the years we've been doing this podcast, and that's must be 16 years, coming up for 16 years in December, you know, one great byproduct of it is that there's a sort of group of people that have, you know, formed around this podcast that have sort of become friends. And, you know, we see them at home games. We see them at away games. We even see them abroad. Jim, you've seen them, you know, at Lyon and Ghent. And that's a really nice kind of byproduct. I think for quite a lot of people that, you know, listened to the podcast and then sort of went on the Facebook page, there's just some new people to go to games with, isn't there? Rather than, you know, I think a lot of people end up sort of going with, you know, one friend or their brother or something like that. And so, you know, it's quite a nice thing. It just gives you some other people to go and see the games with and stuff like that. And one person we met through this podcast was our our very good friend Marie Parks, who from the night we met her became a very good friend of all of us. And, you know, we would see her at games, and it was great. And she was a really, really nice person, incredibly funny, big personality, just constantly entertaining to be with. I spent many nights with her after games, slowly getting drunk in the beer merchant's tap. And she very sadly died a few days ago, and not at any great age either, died in her 40s. And she was a really, really lovely person. And she, I remember getting on the train that goes from Gospel Oak to Barking, to go to the very last game at the Boleyn Ground, and the doors opened and there she was standing there. And I got on, and it felt like a very significant moment, because I'm going to the ground where I, you know, very many times saw her dad play, her dad, Phil Parks, legendary West Ham goalkeeper. And I sort of said to her as we were talking on the train, I said, I think this is a sign. I think bumping into you, the daughter of, probably the first goalkeeper, though I think I went in the 70s, you know, with my dad, but I don't really remember who was in goal then. Obviously, it could still have been Parks, but it felt like a sort of a circle was closed. And I thought, yeah, we're going to win this. And we did. And yes, it is. It's very sad, isn't it?
It was such a shock. And, it's one of those sort of horrible, horrible bits of news you get that just leave you genuinely lost for words and deeply, deeply upset. And our really deepest heartfelt sympathies go to her. To her wonderful father and her mother, and to her brother, who we've also come to know. It's just a desperately, desperately sad thing. And she was lovely, really wonderful. I remember we used to we had a group that would Zoom watch games in the pandemic, and I'd got to know her, but probably not as well as you had, Phil. And I just remember everybody, like switching off, leaving at the end of the game, and we just happened to be the last two people who was still on the call, as it were. And I just said, I've got to know you very well, we don't often ever chat, and we chatted for, it was one of my unlimited Zoom room, so we could, and we just chatted for what seemed like hours mainly about football, about just like life. The universe and everything, really, and what a range of interesting things she had to say about everything, really.
She was a really
lovely.
She was a really easy person to talk to, and a very kind of socialized and sociable sort of human. Yeah. She was always entertaining, always funny, always interesting. Yeah, she was great. Terribly sad. It really was a shock because it was so sudden. Came out of nowhere. Awful. Anyway, yes. So let's move forward from the game that I had arranged to see Marie at and sadly didn't, which was the Ghent game. That was very good.
Yes.
We were sort of a little bit worried about them. You'd seen them abroad in the 1-1. And in fact, they did look like a very good outfit to me. I was like, this lot.
And they started that way, didn't they? They're tidy, neat football team, bit of energy about them. Yeah, they were no mugs, definitely, and they started the game well,
And they got their noses in front with a goal. So, it was like that was looking all rather worrying, so 2-1 up in the tie, 1-0 up on the day. But then we sort of did what the youth team were about to do a few days later, and just found our way into the game. And then
set piece again, wasn't it?
It was a free kick from Bowen, wasn't it? And a great near post header, and again, it was a sort of near post for Antonio against Crystal Palace at the weekend from that corner.
Flick on
from Suchek.
So
that's far post, but is. Yeah, what am I thinking of? Oh, anyway.
Well, it was sort of nearish post Flick On, wasn't it? But he
yes.
came.
Yeah,
yeah, and then we just took control of the game, didn't we? After that,
yeah, they fell apart, didn't they?
They did fall apart a bit. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah, we got that penalty. Our second goal was a penalty, and that felt quite soft, I have to say. But we got it.
It was not dissimilar to. It was less blatant than the Thiago one, wasn't it? As we said earlier.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, it was. Yeah. Yeah.
And a long time seemed to go before the referee went back. It's one of those things where
they played for a long time.
Lots of time had passed. Was called back.
And then a fantastic goal from Declan Rice.
Yes.
A run from his own half.
I mean, it was Moses and the Red Sea parting before him, wasn't it?
Yes,
but yeah, what a, that it's the kind of goal that he threatens to score that kind of goals. There was one in a few years ago where he burst all the way through the Leicester.
Yeah.
And hit the bar, I think, with that one. And this was a really not only a great run as we've come to expect, but also a really nice, precise left-footed finish, wasn't it? It was a great, yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah, Roy the Rover stuff. And in fact, Antonio, his one was very good too.
It was quite a mazy run in its own right,
and a whacked finish from. Possibly a bit further out than Rice's, or maybe kind of similar length. That was very much the sort of thing that on another day he could put into Rosette. But it was he hit it really hard, didn't he? Because the keeper got a hand to it.
Yeah. Yes, keeper I think he did.
But it was it was going in, and the keeper didn't put enough glove on it to deflect it over because he hit it really hard. But
Paqueta took the penalty, didn't he? Sort of and he's got that stuttery, bouncy run-up thing that I really hate.
Me too. Couple of minutes of interpretive dance.
Worries me.
Eze did the same thing with his penalty.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the logic of it is you're trying to commit the goalkeeper, whatever. And to be fair to Paqueta, he's taken two like that and scored them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Perfect.
Yes. Once he stops, dancing around, he actually just whacks it quite hard, like Julian Dix, high in the net. Which begs the question: what is all that dancing around for? But I mean, I guess they like to do it.
And I suppose because Benrahma does take a decent penalty, and I suppose he was trying to make because Paqueta gave the ball away that led to the
he did.
To the game goal, and we've noticed we mentioned it. There were a couple of times, weren't there? He gave the ball away on Saturday, and that we have mentioned that he's got that tendency, hasn't he, to give the ball away?
Yeah,
sometimes in quite dangerous positions, but often it is that conundrum that he's often the player looking to make a kind of positive forward pass, to try and try and be progressive, and sometimes
hopefully that will sort of slowly work its way out of his game. But it was, I had a quick look today, in advance of this podcast at the highlights of that Ghent game, and it's bewilderingly atrocious. That play, he just passes it to a Ghent player for no reason. I'm not sure. It's such a bad pass that you can't tell who he wants to receive it. I think someone doesn't make a run that he imagines they're going to. Maybe Benrahma or something like that. But it really just is into a space that the nearest person to get to the ball is a Ghent player by a long way, Anyway, we 4-1 was very good.
It was good.
It's going to get harder, isn't it?
I think Alkmaar will definitely be the best team we've faced in the tournament so far. They're doing all right in the league. They're good at home. Difficult to beat. That'll be a difficult place to go, and we've got to go there second. So can't be complacent. And now we've got your injury to Zuma. That we're perhaps running out of steam a bit. Having had a good little run, up until the Bournemouth game. yeah, you know, it's a semi-final though. And, you know, we've got the experience
Absolutely.
You know, hopefully that will see them through.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're going to have to really get our noses in front, aren't we? Because I think it is going to be tough going to their place. And
Anderlecht went there with a lead, didn't they? A 2-0 lead, I think it was, and didn't come away with the win. So yeah, we do need to, you know, that kind of home away thing, first or second, is has become less of an issue now that away goals don't count double, but it's still not the ideal way round to do it, is it?
No, not really. No.
All better to kind of know what you've got to do at home playing second.
But we, you know, we seem to take the sort of good vibes on from that game into the Bournemouth game, which you know, was a resounding, you know, 4-0 win. It's funny because they've since played some very good football under Gary O'Neill, and sort of didn't they sort of pretty much go safe at the weekend?
And prior to the game, yeah, they're on 39 points now, I think. So they're safe. I mean, you know, that how odd. It looked like we'd gone above them, put them into a bit of trouble. They've just won their next two. And they had been playing well. So all the more remarkable, really. We really, you know, outplayed them and played some very, very nice football, you know.
Yeah. Two of them corners, two Cresswell corners.
Yeah, back set pieces.
Antonio near post. Maybe that's the one I'm talking about. Yeah. Antonio near post. Yeah. And then the Cresswell corner not cleared very well, and Rice's finish.
Yes. That was the third, just before half time. That put the game to bed, really, because, you know, they did play some. They in the final third, they were tidy and were a bit of a threat. So it wasn't, you know, a completely one-sided game, but we took our chances, you know, really, really well. You know, another great goal from Paqueta, you know, Soufal, you know, biting into the tackle, good pressing in that game at Bournemouth, you know, closing down space. He put in a really good cross that Paqueta just kind of, you know, just was determined to get to, and it was a good goal. You know, so yeah, it did feel. Particularly at the, you know, Palace, that their legs were weary, and somehow he's got to find a way of rotating some players in. He brought in Fornals, didn't he, for Palace, but as you say, giving Corne a minute here or a minute there is not really doing the job.
No.
Downs now seems to be not one of the trusted few.
If he was more confident in playing him instead of Souček, that would be a possible change and sort of give Souček a little bit of a rest. You know, Souček is, you know, like Soufal, has seen a bit of a return to form in, you know, since the World Cup. Nevertheless, it is, you know, you've rotation's just part of the modern game, isn't it?
And
saying that you like to work with a small squad, well, unfortunately, football doesn't really let you do that if you're playing two games a week.
You're going to play nine games in April. I mean, he does seem to now to rotate Emerson and Cresswell.
Yeah.
Although Saturday seems to think, you know, if you got hooked at half time, he obviously wasn't impressed with Emerson's performance. To Johnson, since the calamitous game at Brighton, is now another one who can't really be, or more in the, you know, Moyes feels he can't rely on. Wouldn't be surprised to see him moved on, actually, over the summer. It doesn't look like he's really going to cut it as a Premier League player.
No. Well, we're about to talk about young footballers.
We are, because but Bournemouth was good, a really good day out. You know, it was good performance.
Yeah. And, you know, a very good win. The scorpion kick from...
it was lovely. And his reaction, the emotion of it, the relief, you know.
Yes.
He feels he's under pressure, that he's putting pressure on himself, and that seems to be affecting his play, you know. I think he's... he plays with his heart on his sleeve, Fornals, doesn't he? He's like a And I feel sorry for him. I feel he's had a bit of a bum rap this season, actually.
Well, he has. And I mean, you know, on social media, there's been some, you know, he's had a real kind of slating. People are absolutely kind of laying into him. But you're going, well, what evidence are you basing it on? Because he's hardly playing. So if in certain kind of cameos, he maybe doesn't, you know, affect the game as much as you'd like him to, it's like, well, he's sort of rusty. You know, he's rusty. He's not getting any game time. I think it's, you know, incredibly unfortunate how he's the fall guy for, you know, the new players coming in.
It is a bit.
Yeah. I feel like in that first part of the season, you know, I think that, you know, as we've said time and time again on this podcast, coming out the gate in August last year, there were at least three players, starters in the first team. Four, if you include Declan Rice, who was very poor in that first game of the season against Manchester City. But definitely three players who were well below par, and those were Bowen, Suchek, and Soufal. And they weren't sort of getting taken off in games a bit quicker. So, you know, still keep trying to start them. You know, if someone has a drop in form, you know, as we've seen by the return of all three of those players' form, you know, it's temporary. Form is temporary, class is permanent. But Fornal still didn't get a look in when three players are just really not at it, was very extraordinary. And I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if I wouldn't have been surprised if his agent was agitating for a move in the winter transfer window, because he was on the fringes and sometimes in the Spanish squad.
Yeah.
And, you know, not getting picked for West Ham kind of did for that. And, you know, I could easily see him going, well, that's it, I'm off now, you know, and he's been treated very badly. Yeah. But you know, a good win. And then for £5 a ticket, we went to the youth final, the under-18s.
We did.
FA Cup final.
That was a joy, a real pleasure.
It was. It was.
You know, again, you know, went a goal down, you know, and I'd said to you, got on the way up, that, you know, although we've beaten them twice in the under-18 league, a lot of their young players play up in terms of their age group, as indeed do one a few of ours. So it's a sort of be a slightly different kettle of fish. And actually, they looked very lively and much the better team for the first 10 minutes, didn't they?
They Arsenal did.
Deservedly went ahead.
Very 7 minutes they went ahead.
Yeah.
So very early in the game.
But then we just kind of blew them away in a little kind of sort of 10-minute spell in the middle of the first half,
it was really interesting. Quite a sort of object lesson for the first team in a way, in that I think, you know, I didn't think there was a great disparity in the sort of quality of the players on show for either team. In fact, I thought maybe Arsenal had a little bit more flair, more players. But West Ham's team, the under-18 team, was like a machine that just rolled over them. It just went... I don't know if they were actually better footballers. They just work like a team. They're a fantastic machine. You know, everyone knows their job. You know, the fullbacks were good. Everyone did their job well. You know, no one's really going walkabout in the pitch. Those two, the number seven and the number eight, were sort of in the centre part of the pitch. 9, 10, 11 were in front of them.
Earthy and Kelly.
I liked Kelly. I think he's the seven, wasn't he?
Yeah, he ran out of puff a bit,
yes,
didn't he? But my goodness me, he was everywhere in the first half, and you know, snappy in the tackle, but also good distribution.
Read the game well.
Read the game
sort of not a big player, but sort of in that respect, he reminded us of Noble a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, had that thing about him. Yeah,
yeah.
The left back's very good, isn't he? He's the guy Scholes who played.
Ollie Scholes who played in the European
last group.
The
game.
Sort of dead rubber game.
Yeah.
Yes.
The
he
right
was
back
very
had
good.
A harder time.
Yeah.
He was up against a very good Arsenal winger. Found it a bit more difficult. But the centre half, that number six who scored the fourth goal. He looks, you know, if he fills out and, you know, so difficult to tell with centre halves, isn't it? Because, you know, kids grow at different rates and sometimes they huge beam poles, but then everybody catches them up or whatever. But he looked a decent player. Mubama had a, didn't score, but had a very good game pulling their defenders out of position, chasing lost causes. Yeah. You know, quite a lot of balls over the top for him that he was never going to get to, but he manfully tried.
Leading the line, really. He was leading the line.
He was.
Yeah. Quite an old-fashioned sort of, you know, head of a kind of triangle of, you know, four players.
Yeah, and the other striker is that who scored the second goal.
The
is a guy called Cam Marshall. No, the...
The
sort of tap-in, but I mean, you know, you've got to be in the right place to tap those. He is, he scored a lot of goals this season, and I thought he was impressive as well, to be honest. And then the captain. And that fit,
Kodua.
Yeah,
Kodua. Yeah, that lob chipping the keeper was great. Did it with such confidence as well. I mean, that's like there was only one way that was going, you know.
We've often sang at Arsenal fans, haven't we, in that stadium, 60,000 Muppets. Well, there weren't. There weren't as many of them there, and there were about 8,000 West Ham fans there. But I do think they were Muppets. I mean, I, it's a cup final. You've made the effort to... I think a lot of people just thought they were going to turn up. It's Arsenal versus West Ham. They would just roll us over. I think they probably had people coming with... hadn't really taken much notice of what West Ham team has been doing this season. And thought, oh, this will just be a procession. And then when they went, particularly when they went 4-1 down, the place emptied, didn't it?
Yeah.
And there was still quite a long while to go. And I may be just flattering us, but I just don't think a West Ham crowd would have done that to their kids.
No.
At 4-1. I think it's a cup final.
Yeah.
You know, you stay, don't you? And in the end, it was West Ham applauding the Arsenal team. Rather than any Arsenal fans, because they're
yes. To be completely clear, what we're saying for the listeners is that, you know, as you know, they were beaten 5-1, which they treated the way some fans treat a Premier League team, which is by just fucking off. So there was literally, because you know, at the end of that game, you get a presentation.
Yes.
And both teams are at the presentation. One of them has won, but the other team, you know, gets
it's your youth team.
Gets and they literally abandoned them to finish to an end. And that was terrible way to encourage your kids is to literally fuck off because they lose.
Yeah,
it's like stay and clap, stay and applaud them.
Absolutely,
you know, they've had their pants pulled down. They might not be feeling great about themselves, so stay and give them a round of applause because they may well be playing for you in a couple of years in your first team, and you saw them there first, and they might have lost, but they're still your players. You know, unbelievable.
I think
it was nearly empty, wasn't it? Except for 8,000 West Ham fans who, completely, had to sort of applaud both teams.
Yeah, and disrespectful to the West Ham team as well. I thought it was shocking.
Yes, it was.
But then again, you know, what do we expect from that? Not, I think they are.
Yes. Yes. Now we have we need to sort of really wrap up by talking probably about the brace of games against the two Manchester teams. I mean, it really. You know,
he's in a bind for tomorrow night, isn't he? What does he do? Does he? We have to not concede a huge. You know, we can't have an avalanche so that suddenly our goal difference is as bad as everybody else's. You know, we want to try and preserve that goal difference advantage that we've got because it's worth a point. So he's. I mean, obviously, we'll tactically we'll sit deep and we'll make it frustrating for them, a bit like we did in that League Cup game against them a couple of years ago. You know, and just try and keep it as low as possible.
Yeah.
But does he therefore make changes?
Does he rotate? Can
he afford, he's got to change for Zuma. So I'm imagining Kehrer will get a game in some position. Downs, you know, I don't know. He's got to rest some players. If we end up, because they'll have the ball most of the time, so it's always harder when you're chasing the ball and have less possession. So
it's exhausting.
So, oh, I don't know.
And you know, the more winnable game is the home fixture at the weekend.
Man United.
No, in fact,
yeah, you know, I think that is winnable. I can see us getting something out of that. I think we'll need to, and I think the chips are down, and I can imagine us getting something out of that game, definitely.
Yeah. So he is in a bind with what to do tomorrow about sort of resting players. I mean, you'd hope that he's got a good sense of, you know, players' energy levels and their sort of reserves. I mean, you know, he took Paqueta off on Sunday, but it does seem that, you know, Paqueta does have a pretty good engine and can kind of stay out there a long time. He's quite often the substitution, though, isn't he, Paqueta? He's, you know, in you know, if we're chasing the game, it's quite often something like Paqueta for Ings would be a kind of change that he'd make. Leave Rice out there, take Paqueta off. But it feels to me like Paqueta's got a pretty good engine. He's quite an athlete, you know? And
yes.
You probably can leave him out there. And, you know, Declan is possibly the one you need to sort of,
He's an extraordinary athlete, isn't he, Declan Rice? And we've been very, very lucky that he's been injury-free all this time. Touch wood, etc.
Yeah. I'm sort of almost loath to do score predictions for those guys. But
it could be a tight kind of 2-1 or something, or it could be, it was last season, 2-1, you know. It could be 6-0, couldn't it? I mean, it depends what mood they're in. They've got to conserve a bit of, you know, they've got important games coming up. They're in that mode now where they are doing enough to win the game.
Yeah.
Not extending themselves, you know, too much, because they've got big, big important games coming up. They have to win. I don't think they can afford to drop points, or Arsenal will be back in with a shout.
Yeah.
So they will, they, you know, you can imagine them blitzing us at the start, you know, really trying to get early goals. I think he'll be conservative, you know, Pep will be conservative with his team selection, look to get it, you know, and then he'll have, you know, they've got such strength off the bench, haven't they?
I
don't know. I don't know. I'm going to go
3-0 to City. Yes. I might take the 2-1 then, like we got last time. We're not as good an outfit as that time, unfortunately. That was a sort of slightly bicycle kicky goal from Antonio, or was that the previous season?
No, Lanzini, I think.
Right.
It's quite
an acrobatic goal against them. Maybe that was the season before the sixth place finish season from Antonio.
Yeah,
wasn't there?
Yeah,
so either like a bicycle kick or just a.
Wasn't that in the home game?
Was it?
I think the home game was a draw.
The home game at the end of last season was a draw, wasn't it? Because didn't we go 2-up? Was that the end of last season?
Oh, was it? Oh God, I'm confusing that.
Oh well, there isn't time. We'll check that.
Go away and look it up. Google it.
Yeah. And then it's United on Sunday evening, and
yes, odd game, odd time for a game.
I'm gonna say 1-1.
I'm gonna go for a 2-1 win. I think the chips will be down, and I think we will beat them.
Great. Excellent. Well, that's it from this week's Stop Hammer Time. My name is Phil Whelans. With me has been Jim Grant.
Cheerio.
Come on, you Irons.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.